Welcome to Mom Talk with Maria Bailey. For the next hour, join Maria as she takes on topics important to you. Finances, raising children, and dealing with your husband through his tough times and yours. This is the place to be as Maria and her guests bring you a wealth of information on all of these topics. Now, Maria Bailey on Mom Talk Radio.
We are in the middle of July, and I was going to say it's hot around the United States, but we've been hit with kind of a cool front drifting across the U.S., at least in some areas of the country. I actually got up and went running this morning. It was in the 60s. Of course, I was in upstate New York, but nonetheless, it was in the 60s, which for me as a native Floridian is really, really cool. So I was in upstate New York dropping my daughter off at sleepaway camp, and I wonder how many of you parents are also experiencing that. I don't know. It's kind of like a bittersweet relationship between some sleepaway camp and your children. You look forward to kind of, I don't know, they're in a nice, secure place. You know, they're not bored. They're having a good time. But at the same time, when you leave, it just like rips your heart out that you're leaving them there, because like my daughter had knew no one at this camp. So when I left, I left her in a room with one other girl, and it took me about 4 hours to finally just convince myself that she's going to be okay. She'll have a lot of friends. She'll call me in a week and she'll be having a blast and she won't want to come home. And I just have to remind myself of that every now and then. But we are in the thick of summer, and already they are selling us back to school products on TV. I was walking through Target the other day, 50-cent crayons. I grabbed up a few just because you feel like you got to have, for 50 cents, you got to have a new box of crayons around your house, right? So so they're already hitting us up to having some definite back to school shopping ahead of us. We have a great show today, and when we come back, we're going to dive right in as we talk with one expert who's going to bring us abreast of how to develop bookworms in this digital age.
Even supermoms need a little advice. Here's yours. More of Mom Talk Radio.
You know, in this day and age where our children are constantly looking down at an iPhone or an app, or they're playing Xbox, every mother dreams that her child would become a bookworm. And we wonder, you know, it seems like a lot of parents know how to do that when their children are 1 or 2 years old. We read them, you know, we read to our stomachs, we read to our children before they can read. But then they get in that awkward stage where we're fighting technology. Our next guest is the author of Born Reading, Bringing Up Bookworms in a Digital Age, from picture books to ebooks and everything in between. He was a publishing editor at Media Bistro and lead editor of their popular blog Galley Cat for 5 years. And his writings have been featured on NPR and in the Los Angeles Review of Books. We are delighted for him to join us today on Mom Talk Radio. So welcome Jason Bogg to Mom Talk Radio. Welcome, Jason.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Well, tell me a little bit about I'm wondering, did you write this book because of your daughter, or is it just a love of reading that you like to share with other parents?
No, it's completely my daughter. I wanted her to love books as much as I did, and so I just started reading from the very first weeks of her life. And after a few months, I could see just tangible benefits, just how it was really changing and helping turn on her brain. And so I said, there's got to be more to this. So I started interviewing over 50 different experts about what reading does for children and what are the best ways to read to children. And so basically I grew as a parent while writing this book and tested all of the techniques with my daughter.
Well, I got to tell you, I think reading is one of those things that parents, you know, even if they don't know how to do it, they try to do it. I was on Facebook the other day, and I saw a mom who had put her baby like on a boppy, so she was a little propped up, and had a Sesame Street book just like sitting in front of her. And I'm thinking, oh my God, this poor kid. Like, I mean, she could not even, I don't know, she was maybe 6 weeks old. And I'm thinking, whoa, that mom really wants her daughter to learn how to read. So what are the tactics that we should be doing? Should we be propping up children and sticking books in front of them? Or what is the tactic?
Yeah, well, I think for those very first weeks, there's going to be a great deal of propping up. The most important thing that experts told me over and over that parents need to do, it's called interactive reading. You have to just make sure that when you're reading a book, that it's not a passive experience. It's not just the adult reading and the child listening. You have to involve them. Even if they can't speak, you can point to things in the book. You can explain words to them, and you can just see if they're interacting with you during that reading experience. Researchers have found that having that sort of really quality talking back and forth with your child experience while reading can raise their IQ by more than 6 points. It blew my mind when I read that number. I mean, it's a really significant health benefit for your child, both emotionally and intellectually. And I just can't see why any parent would want to miss that tremendous potential there.
What, when do you think the potential ends? Like, I mean, it's, that's got to be for kids under three, or does it continually grow after that?
That was the fun thing is, even though my daughter is only four, she's going to be four in a month here, I found that these benefits don't end at all during a child's school education period. Once you've modeled these skills over your child's early life, I discovered that the interacting with a story and asking questions and seeing how they feel about a story, these are all skills that they are going to need from kindergarten onward in school, especially with the new Common Core curriculum that's coming to about 44 different states. Kids are going to have to ask a lot more questions while reading, and parents can be modeling these behaviors for their kids from the very, very first moments of their child's life. So I urge parents to start early and just continue all the way through the school years.
Okay, I'm going to ask what I think is the obvious question here, but does it have to be a book, or is an iPad or a Kindle, does that count as reading a book?
Absolutely, absolutely. I stress that over and over in the book is we are really living in an amazing age right now with lots and lots of different reading opportunities for your children. And you can have that same interactive reading experience I described with a digital device. My daughter and I, over the weekend, we were reading Berenstain Bears books on the iPad using these same techniques I talked about, and we were just flipping through digital versions of them. And it's a great way for her to cruise through as many Berenstain Bears books as she wants. We've had the same experience with audiobooks. Every day when I drive her to school, we listen to Frog and Toad audiobooks on the on the CD player in the car, and we have interactive conversations about willpower and some of the cool stuff that Frog and Toad talk about.
So how do you find, or how do you know as a parent what's appropriate at what age for your child?
I really tried in the book to, in each chapter I outlined apps that I recommend and books that I recommend for each year of your child's life all the way up through kindergarten. So you can start there. I would also say go to your library. Librarians are such powerful resources in this area. I actually went to the American Library Association conference last month and saw just, they recommended so many digital apps, so many different books to me, books that are really good for being interactive. It's amazing what librarians can teach you, so I'd recommend to go to librarians. And then finally, the one thing that these researchers told me over and over is you got to read the books that your child is interested in. If your daughter or son, like my daughter, was into Frozen, go find everything you can find about Frozen. I found the Disney Golden Book story version of Frozen. I found The Snow Queen, which was the Hans Christian Andersen fairy tale that inspired the Frozen. And I found an audiobook version of that Hans Christian Andersen tale. You just find as many different things as you can about the stories they love. So let your child guide it, and that's when the most effective learning and the most effective growth happens for a child.
That makes sense. You know, and I think I'd like to talk about, I know it's older than your particular child, but, you know, I had a non-reader who actually became a reader like at age 11 and 12, and I could never get her to read before then. And it really was like one series of books, and it was my husband reading a chapter out loud to her, and then she would read a chapter. And it went back and forth until the book series was done. But now she'll devour a book on an airplane ride. And so can you talk a little bit about, like, older children?
Yeah, I think one thing I realized when I was reading this book, I mean, I've taken credit my whole life for being a reader. It's part of my identity. I said, I'm a reader and I'm a writer. And I just felt like it was part of my independence, part of my identity. But as I was writing this, I realized that I was a reader because my parents were readers. I mean, they had the bookshelf, the first bookshelf I ever read. My mother drove me to the library. This series of modeling, they modeled for me these activities that became so important later in my life. And I just realized how important those people, the role that those caregivers played in my life was. And so I think the most important thing that parents can do is be readers themselves. Show them that they're not just playing Candy Crush on their phone. Show them that you can read a book.
Well, really good stuff. Congratulations on the book. You can find out more about Jason and his love of reading and what he says about it at jasonboog.com. And thank you, Jason, so much for being with us today on Mom Talk Radio. When we return, we're turning the spotlight on one mom who is in the blogosphere, really changing a lot of what we're reading. Excited to have with me today a mom who has been blogging for over 7 years. Now, you would say, well, that is not such a long time. But if you think about it, blogging really hasn't been around for that long a time. And Sarah Bisbeck is one of those who jumped right in when people started blogging. And she blogs at sarahviz.com. She has a 12-year-old, a 10-year-old, and a 9-year-old. Which makes you wonder, how in the world do you maintain a blog for 7 years with three kids and that keep you busy? And she's going to give us some of her secrets today on Mom Talk Radio. So welcome, Sarah, to Mom Talk.
Thank you for having me, Maria.
So tell me a little bit, first of all, why did you get into blogging 7 years ago? Because it would be easy to explain today because a lot of people have done a lot with their blogs, but 7 years ago, it wasn't that way.
That's true, Maria. I got into blogging 7 years ago simply because I wanted a place to write down all the important milestones and memories from the times when my children were young and growing up. And I was never really good about keeping baby books. I just couldn't seem to stay organized with the photos and the mementos and the locks of hair and the first teeth and so on. So, and I'd always been somewhat of a writer in my, as a career, I'm a paralegal. So there's quite a bit of writing involved in that. And it was one of those things where when my first son was born, I thought, you know, naively thought, oh, I'm always going to remember the day he first started crawling or the day he first started walking. Well, then baby number two comes along, and then baby number three comes along, and by that time the memory is completely shot. So I found that blogging was a great place to sort of write down about our family life and the development of the boys, and just a place to sort of keep memories. And it started out as just something for myself, but eventually and organically it just grew.
And, you know, the big question is, have you turned your blog now from something that you use just to chronicle? Have you turned it into a business? Because that's what a lot of moms are really interested in, is like blogging as a business.
Right, right. In some ways I have, and in some ways I haven't. I've tried to keep it very, I like to keep it as organic as possible. I like, the theme of my blog is I want everyone to feel like they're not alone, that, you know, raising children, that some days are good, some days are bad, some days you might not always like your kids, but you always love them. And I just wanted to write in a tone of voice where people could feel like they could identify, that I'm not some superwoman who has three beautiful children who are always in clean clothes and with picture-perfect manners, that I want people to be able to identify with who I am and what I'm about. And, you know, in being that way, some opportunities have arisen from my blog with sponsors and trips and conferences and that sort of thing. But at the same time, I've never really focused on my blog as a business, simply because I do have a full-time career as well.
Well, and I think when you're passionate about something, opportunities come without you consciously making that decision. You know, other people see your passion and are gravitated toward it.
Exactly.
We just have a few minutes left. I guess the next obvious question is, how does a mom find time to sit down and collect her thoughts and write for 7 years when, you know, this child has to go to soccer, that child has to go to football, this, you know, dinner has to be cooked, and you have a full-time job? How do you do that?
Exactly. I do have to say, it's funny, and it's weird but true. I swear, my best ideas for writing posts come when I'm blow-drying my hair for some reason. I don't know what it is, but when I'm getting ready for work in the morning or getting ready to go somewhere and I am standing in front of the mirror with a blow-dryer in my hand, I feel like my mind, that's just where I sort of mull things over and figure out what I want to write about. And then it's just a matter of taking pen to paper or, you know, fingers to keyboard and spitting it all out. But, yeah.
I know there's some really good stuff. And if you want to see what Sarah has been thinking about while she's blow drying her hair, visit her blog, sarahbiz.com. A link to it on Mom Talk Radio. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today. And I encourage everybody to check out her blog because it's really, really good. When we return, we're going to talk with someone who knows a little bit about dating and how you can protect your child from those unwelcome kisses and more.
Mothers of America, this hour belongs to you. It's Mom Talk Radio with Maria Bailey.
You know, having a 15-year-old daughter, I myself am having a lot of conversations about dating, and they don't always go the way I planned. I am sure that if you are a mom of a tween or teen, you also are contemplating how those conversations should go. So we have invited with us today an expert who has done a lot of work. In fact, he's heading up a program called Can I Kiss You? It's a program that has reached millions of people worldwide, helping with those awkward conversation and also keeping dates safe. We're joined today by Mike Domish. He's a speaker, author, and executive director at the Date Safe Project. So welcome, Mike, to Mom Talk Radio.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Maria.
Well, I'm particularly happy to have you because not only do I have this challenge of a 15-year-old who wants to date and I'm not really sure where that's going in my household, although I know where I want it to go. But also, more and more, you're hearing, I just read another article in the New York Times last week or USA Today, of college students who are in these predicaments where they're being raped by boys that don't understand the word no, or they're just in situations that are unsafe. So I'm excited to have you with us today to kind of address that. So first of all, let's start with the awkward conversation that parents need to have with their children.
Well, yes, and the key to that is making it more of a question and listening moment for the parent. Often parents think, I want to make sure I protect my kids so they're going to know this. And what happens is you've turned into a lecture mode. And whether you're a teenager or an adult, people do not like being lectured. So what we want to do is ask them questions. So, for instance, when it comes to dating in high school, what are you seeing? Are your friends dating? What does dating mean? Are they staying together for a week, a month? Are they intimate with each other? What does that mean? Ask questions that are not about your child, but about the world they're living in. That way it's not a personal, inquisitive, what can feel like an invasion of their privacy.
Well, that question always tends to lead with, or particularly in my house, well, how old do I have to be when I can go on a date? Can I go on a date now? And, you know, like most parents, I kind of have an age around it because to me, age somewhat attached to maturity. How do we set our standards while we're having that conversation?
Well, one of the great things to do is look at the age laws in your state. For instance, in the state of Wisconsin, the age law of consent is 16. So for any parent to let a child date before the age of 16, you'd be violating the law. Now, dating is not against the law. I don't want to misrepresent in any way. But if you talk to most teenagers and say, when you start dating, are you hoping to experience some kind of intimacy with this person you're attracted to? If they're amongst their friends, they're going to say, of course, I am at some point. I'm not saying right now, but at some point.
Right.
Well, they can't get consent for that intimacy until they're 16, for instance, in Wisconsin. So if you know your age of consent, you can really help your child understand, I don't want you or your partner to be in putting yourself at high risk by being in any situation that you can't legally be in, and therefore there'd be a sexual assault, sexual misconduct occurring. So that's why waiting until, for instance, 16, it's great for you and your partner because you're at an age where you can legally give each other consent to if you want to kiss each other or if you were to make that decision for something more down the road. You need to know what the age is, and so that's really important. Like in Wisconsin, age consent, that's for some activity at 16, but that's not for everything until 18. So parents knowing their age within their state can really help them set boundaries according to that also.
What are some of the other mistakes that parents can make around the conversation of dating and,
yes,
you know?
One of the biggest mistakes parents will often make is they'll talk to their kids by gender instead of by being a person overall, regardless of gender. So they'll say, boys, you want to make sure you do this. Girls, you want to make sure you do that. And all you're doing is setting up gender roles that fill stereotypes and also tend to put it about men against women. Because why are you teaching the guy differently than you're teaching the woman? Respect is respect. So whether you're talking to your son or your daughter and you're saying you always deserve to have a choice, they should both hear that message. They should both hear your partner deserves to always have a choice. There should be no differences in that. And males and females can be sexually assaulted. So when parents sit there and go, well, I don't want anything to ever happen to my daughter. Well, I hope you don't want anything to ever happen to your son either. Or
right.
I don't ever want my son to do harm to somebody else. Okay, well, I hope you don't want your daughter to ever do harm to somebody else or make them feel guilty. We also want to be careful about being heterosexist and always saying to a boy, your girlfriend, well, if your son is not attracted to females, that puts him in a more uncomfortable situation of not being able to talk with you because you made a massive assumption. So using the word partners is much smarter and safer and more inclusive.
Wow. These are all things that, you know, my parents didn't think about when they were bringing me up. What about When you're in the schools and you're talking with middle schoolers and high schoolers, what's on their mind?
You know what's on their mind? They want to do the right thing. They just wish they had an easy way to do the right thing. You know, that's the thing parents often think, you know, don't be stupid, which is really insulting to the child. Because the child's sitting there going, all right, you just implied I'm stupid, and you actually have to tell me not to be stupid. Instead, realize your kid wants to make the right choices. So when you look at your son or your daughter, you want to have that first of mind as a parent. Okay, they want to do the right thing. Am I giving them the skill set to do the right thing? Making a philosophical statement is not a skill set. And so the question is, have I taught my children how to ask for what they want? How to talk about their boundaries openly with a partner, how to feel comfortable saying no, how to feel comfortable saying yes. Have I given them the actual skills to be able to do these things to really help them be as safe as possible in intimacy moments?
Well, a lot of good stuff, a lot of really, really great advice. And our listeners can find out more about the project at datesafeproject.org. Mike, you have devoted your life to this, and thank goodness there's people like you out there who are helping moms and dads like myself go through this really, really, it's a crazy river of knowledge. So thank you so much, Mike, for being with us today on Mom Talk Radio, and I encourage everybody to visit the site datesafeproject.org. When we return, we're going to turn our attention to nutrition and breastfeeding.
Even supermoms need a little advice. Here's yours. More of Mom Talk Radio.
You know, a lot of moms hear about breastfeeding being best, but, you know, do we really stop long enough to understand the nutritional value behind formulas, behind breast milk. And we have an expert today to talk a little bit about that. Christina Sherry is with us. She's a research scientist at Abbott. She's an expert in prenatal and pregnancy nutrition with a focus on nutritional early programming of latter health outcomes. And she is here to talk all nutrition for new and expectant moms. So welcome, Christina, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thank you, Maria. I really appreciate that great introduction. Looking forward to speaking with you today about this.
So let's talk a little bit about the nutritional needs of a breastfeeding mother. And why are they so important? And, you know, it's kind of funny that we're talking about the needs of the mom, because most moms, when they're breastfeeding, they're so harried, lack of sleep, that they forget about the nutrition of themselves. So I'm really excited that you're talking about it.
Yes, Maria, that is a really great point. Those first early days in life become very difficult sometimes for mom to have any focus on herself. But it is really important to note that the nutritional needs for mom are actually greater during her time breastfeeding, even than when she was pregnant, because not only is mom supporting her nutritional needs, but she's also supporting those growing needs of her infant when she's breastfeeding.
And so let's talk a little bit about a study that you recently did and results.
Right, yes, I really am glad that you brought that up. So Abbott recently conducted a study that's been published in the Journal of Nutrition looking at not only the nutritional needs of mom during her breastfeeding time, looking at her diet and what she was consuming, but then also providing a supplement to her, which demonstrated that there was significant increase in these nutrients in her breast milk when she took this supplement.
And how did the study run?
Oh, yeah. So the way that this study ran, sorry, just kind of clarifying the question in my mind. So we had women that came in about 1 to 3 months after they had given birth, and they were randomized to two different groups to receive a placebo or to receive the supplement. And they just took the supplement as they normally would. We didn't give them any instructions on how to change their diet or anything. And they, you know, filled out food records and we recorded all the information on the dietary intake that we had. So we were able to analyze both the dietary intake as well as we took breast milk samples from the moms to understand what the impact of the supplement had on those nutrients in their breast milk.
Okay, and so the things you were looking at were vitamin E and things like DHA. Why are these important to mom and her diet?
Right, so it is really important for two reasons. One, it is important for mom's diet because a significant majority of women, both in our study as well as women of childbearing age in the U.S., are not consuming the ideal amounts of DHA, lutein, and vitamin E, the nutrients in the supplement. Also, we know that these are key nutrients that are important for early infant development. So if mom's not consuming them in her diet, they're more than likely not going to be in her breast milk, so then the baby may be at risk for not consuming adequate amounts as well.
And so if you're not getting enough through natural means, there are supplements. Can you tell us a little bit about what Similac's doing?
Right, so Similac has recently launched the breastfeeding supplement, which again contains DHA, lutein, and vitamin E at the levels that are the ideal amounts and the recommended levels. So again, obviously we want to focus on diet. My background as a dietitian tells me that. We want to make sure mom is consuming, you know, the ideal amounts of fruits and vegetables and fatty fish, which is where most of these nutrients come from. But we do know, and the reality tells us, that that just is not happening for a lot of moms, back to your point about being very busy with the baby in those early days. So if mom isn't consuming them, then it may be a good idea to think about taking a supplement to make sure that those levels are adequate in her diet and her breast milk.
So this is pretty incredible. I mean, I think this is so smart of Similac because, I mean, if a mother can't for some reason breastfeed, you have formulas now that are enhanced with DHA and all of these other vitamins and nutrients that the baby needs. And now you're actually turning to the health of the mom, which I think is just so overdue. Like, kudos to you guys to – like, think about the mom who actually, it just seems kind of out of the ordinary that a formula company would think about, in, you know, supporting the breastfeeding mom and her nutrition. So I just think it's way to go, Abbott.
Yeah. Well, Abbott is a leader in infant nutrition, not just infant formula. You know, we continually do study breast milk and strive to make, you know, our formula as close as breast milk as possible. So in those learnings about what we're studying in breast milk, it really did come to light that, you know, there is a need for mom and a breastfeeding mom. So she's just as important because she's nourishing that baby as it is when we think about the science that we put behind our formula.
Well, I just love companies that are supporting moms in the ways you guys are doing. And you can find more information that about the study, Chris, on Similac.com, correct?
Correct, yep.
Okay, well, thank you so much for being with us today. Great information. We have a link to Similac.com on Mom Talk Radio. And remember, it's not only the health of your child, but it's your health as well. Because mom's not feeling well, there's a baby.
Superbike school is, well, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about it with Keith Toad because he is the founder of California Superbike School and is most famous for the champion motorcyclists. He has coached nearly 50 of them, including three-time world champions. And the school runs in 13 different countries on five continents and trains a whole bunch of riders. He was the first person to develop a technology for motorcycle riding, and he was voted in 1991 to be a Motorcyclist of the Year. He's here to talk to us about the Foundation for a Drug-Free World. He's an ambassador, and I want to welcome Keith to Mom Talk Radio. Hey, Keith.
Thank you very much for having me on the show, Maria.
Okay, so all you have to do is mention the word motorcycle to a mom. In fact, my son 2 weeks ago called home to say, "Hey, mom, I got my motorcycle license." And I was like, it puts you into like I don't know, this coma state for a second.
You want to talk about that real quick?
Get us over that hurdle.
We've been to the Foundation for a Drug-Free World and our process of educating people on what drugs do, because really parents should be more concerned about the drugs than they should about the motorcycle riding license, because recent statistics are pretty grim. You know, we know that 50% of all school children are going to try drugs by the time they get out of high school. And we also know, unfortunately, that these days it's not just marijuana or heroin or cocaine or these other things that that are other drugs that are available out there, street drugs, but it's prescription drugs, which are very available to people. And, you know, we're looking at an absolute epidemic with over 46,000 people dying per year from overdoses from prescription drugs. So the foundation is dedicated to educating people on what all the drugs are all about. And we have an enormous amount of free material that we'll send out to anybody who wants it.
Is there any, I guess, trend or increased use of any particular drug these days that moms and dads might be surprised about or should be aware of?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Again, it's the scourge of the society these days is prescription drugs. So we're looking at oxycodone and all the opioids. Also, other variety of tranquilizers and psychotropic drugs, which are very, very available, and people are taking these things to, you know, get high, and it's not turning out well. So that motorcycle license, while it may put the child at risk, is they're far more at risk because of the availability of these prescription drugs.
Right. So we have these dangers in our house, but yet we always kind of seem to focus on the outside dangers. One of the things that I know that the foundation works toward is how to help parents talk to their children about drugs, because, you know, people try to educate us about the sex talk. And we just had an author who wrote a book on the eye rules and using your technology. But when it comes to drugs, a lot of parents don't really know how to talk about it.
That's true. That's true. And one of the beauties of the Truth About Drugs booklets, again, free to your listeners, is that they open the door, a very, very easy door to open with especially teens, because the booklets themselves are very alluring. The covers are fetching for teens. And the booklets themselves contain information about the drugs, and that's all there is information in there. What do they do? What are the short and long-term physical effects? What are the short and long-term mental effects? So any parent or concerned person can pick up one of these booklets and sit down with somebody or just leave it on the table. Kids will pick them up and read them. And they've been very effective. In many areas of the world where we distribute these books, we've seen a reduction in drug use, and in some cases, very dramatic reductions of drug use.
Yeah, you know what I did in my house? I bought a drug test at the dollar store and left that on the counter of my house. And man, I can't even tell you the conversations that were started over that. Tell everyone again where we can get the free book. It's called The Truth About Drugs.
Right. The booklets are available free. Your listeners can call our toll-free number, which is 888-NO-TO-DRUGS, or better yet, log on to the website, drugfreeworld.org.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations on all of your success in the motorcycle world, and thank you for the effort that you're now putting forth with the foundation of a drug-free world. Thank you, Keith, very much for that. Sure. We need a wrap here. The day is over for us, Mom Talk Radio, but you can find us online at momtalkradio.com. You can go download our app or find us on the iStore. I'm Maria Bailey. Thanks so much for being here.